Sometimes customer experience feels more like a belief system than a profession. Customer experience practitioners are often passionate about advocating for the customer. Since we're all customers in our own personal capacities as consumers, it's an easy thing to support, right? Who wouldn't want to be able to easily find goods and services that add value to their life? Who wouldn't want the use of these goods and services to be seamless and enjoyable, or at least live up to the expectations that were set by the brand? For some people, this commitment to customers is more than a job. It's a calling. Ian Golding is one of these people. He's a well-established thought leader in the field of customer experience. He is based in the UK, but gives talks, facilitates masterclasses, and consults to clients around the world. Ian is an active member of the Customer Experience Professionals Association and is a certified customer experience professional, or CCXP, which is the only truly independent, internationally recognized accreditation in the field of customer experience. Ian has worked as a CX practitioner within corporations. He has guided brands through their customer-centric evolution as an expert advisor, and now he can add author to his already impressive resume. Ian recently published a book titled Customer What, and we caught up for a conversation at the time of its release. Ian, you recently published a book titled Customer What. What was the catalyst for writing it?
Well, it's the million-dollar question that many people ask me and ask others who've written. I suppose it might sound a bit cliché, but it's the culmination of an ambition. I'm a midlife crisis writer, for want of a better description. I started writing 6 years ago when I came independent, and I've written so many things in that 6 years that turning my thought into a physical, actual book always seemed to be the right thing to do. To finally have done it is quite remarkable, and I still can't quite believe that I now have a book with my name on it, and I think it'll take a little bit of time for that to sink in.
That's exciting. It's quite an achievement. It's very cool.
It is. It's very exciting. And it does feel very cool. I'm like a kid at Christmas at the moment.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you mentioned that one of the really important elements of your book is storytelling. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you chose that style and why it's important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be totally honest, I don't think I chose the style. I think the style chose me. Because from day one, when I started writing, and in fact, it was a fellow CXPA member, Mike Wittenstein, who influenced me to start writing. From the very beginning, I wrote stories. It just seemed the natural thing to me to bring the theory of our subject to life through real, tangible, practical stories that allow people to understand that what we do does have a genuine, tangible, demonstrable effect on people. And so storytelling has become something that I'm quite renowned for. I'm delivering a 2-day masterclass at the moment, actually. So people are being subjected to my stories throughout. But it's what I do. It's what I believe in. And I think a story tells 1,000 words. And what I've tried to do in the book, with the help of my brilliant editor, who is another CXPA member and CCXP, Beth Richardson.
Oh, wonderful.
I've been able to do is combine a little bit of theory with storytelling. So everything that I'm sharing from a theory perspective is brought to life with the story. And I know you'd love me to tell you some of those stories, but if anyone wants to know the stories, they're going to have to get the book.
Wonderful. And I'm sure that we will all rush out and get the book. I can't wait to read it. It's interesting that you say, you know, stories are a way to make it tangible, bring things to life. That's so important. When you're in the weeds with customer-centric change, sometimes it can be hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But stories have such a great way of energizing people and reminding people of that light at the end of the tunnel. So that's fantastic.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing about stories is that they're happening every single day. And I'm often asked, where do I come up with the stories? And I don't have to come up with them. They happen. They literally happen every day. And I think if you want to become a great storyteller, you just need to keep your eyes and ears open.
Yeah.
And never underestimate the power of a story. because it makes such a difference and it encourages others to tell stories of their own. And there is nothing, in my opinion, more powerful than getting people to recount recent experiences of their own, whether it be a good one or a bad one. But if people remember and recount an experience, it really does massively help them to understand what customer experience means.
Storytelling is something that's been a part of the human existence probably since the dawn of time. I mean, it's hardwired into who we are as creatures, this, you know, desire to tell stories. So you also mentioned that you want people to see the practical outputs, the practical takeaways, and be inspired by this. What are you hoping people will be inspired to do?
My vision for this book was like everything I do related to customer experience, and it was to create something that would be a practical assistance to anyone who has an interest in the subject. I haven't created this book as a money-making enterprise. That's never been my motivation in anything I do. But what I'm hoping for is that this book, which will hopefully stand out because it's an unusual color for a business-related book, but what I'm hoping is it's the kind of book that will have all sorts of things sticking out of it. You know, different colored sticky notes, bits of paper, people will have scribbled all over it and written things on it. And it will be almost the go-to guide that people will refer to as they continue to transform the organizations they work in. If I turn up in someone's office and see it all crumpled up with stuff all over it on someone's desk, then I'll be a very happy man.
Wonderful. And what are some of the topics that you picked in the book? What are some of the things that you cover in terms of helping people think about how they can drive transformation in their organization?
So the book is very aligned, as people would expect, to the way I have always shared knowledge on the subject of customer experience. And I talk about the need for knowledge sharing rather than teaching. And the book very much follows that principle. And it's divided into four parts, essentially. The fundamentals of customer experience. So how do you establish a firm footing to really start transforming an organization? It has a section around culture and the importance of connecting people to strategy. It has a section around making it all happen in practice, which very much focuses on what I've called the tools of the trade and knowing how and when to use them. And then very importantly, it has a fourth part to it, which is something that I've written about a lot, which is the need to sustain a focus on customer experience. And so there's a lot of stuff within those four sections, but it's also a book that's been written and been enabled to be written through the support of many customer experience professionals around the world. So in actual fact, at the back of the book are some shout outs, if you like, to people who have delivered great experiences for members of my network who've supported the book. And so it's quite nice to see people that work in restaurants and barber shops all getting their own recognition at the back of this book for the things they've done for people who've supported my efforts.
The customer experience field is a field that, you know, it's relatively new. It's fledgling in many ways. I mean, you could say it's a field of work that didn't even formally exist 15 years ago, at least not in the way we consider it today. So it's fantastic to put some structure around the theories and the ways of working and stuff.
And, you know, the point about the book is the two words in the subtext of honest and practical. And it's all about practicality. My favorite sentence didn't come from me, which might sound slightly ironic. But in the beginning of the book, I have added a quote. And it's a quote that was actually given to me by a South African lady, a quite brilliant lady who is so humble. in her brilliance that she doesn't want people to know that she said it, because she doesn't want it to be about her. But the words she used at the end of spending 2 days with me talking about customer experience were as follows. She said, "I always knew that customer experience was important, but I didn't realize it was a science. And behind that science is a heart." And I think is a very profound statement that perfectly describes for me what customer experience as a profession, as a discipline, has become. And I'd like to think that my book explains the science and how it connects to the heart. I think that's probably, I would hope, what people will feel when they've read it.
When people think about customer service, they think about the heart, which is great, but that's not it. That's not how you deliver great experiences, is just through emotion and connection. That's sort of the icing on top of the cake, but it's definitely not everything. It's actually quite a lot of science, and helping businesses and individuals understand that science is incredibly important.
Well, that's why our profession is so important, because it needs us to share the science and to embed the science and to allow people to maximize the benefit of it. And the problem today in many organizations and many parts of the world is that people understand customer experience intuitively, but if you don't understand the science of how to apply it, then you ultimately will never deliver the experience you want your customers to have. And that's why it's so important for us to keep sharing the benefits of being part of our profession, and that we continue to collaborate as a community to share knowledge and ideas together.
Yeah. And as you work with clients around the world, I mean, you travel all over the place working with different companies, teaching them about, or I guess I shouldn't say teaching, but doing knowledge sharing with clients around the world. What are some of the main blockers that you see within organizations where it's preventing the customer experience to land?
So what I'm about to say to you is not going to surprise you at all, and won't surprise many people who will listen to this. The number one I describe as a lack of cross-functional collaboration. In other words, the inability to break down silos. And that is pretty consistent wherever you are in the world. But I would say what I've observed in South Africa is as extreme as anywhere in the world in terms of people not working together, but working in isolation of each other, is probably the number one. The number two, I would say, is that too many organizations have lost sight of the reason why they exist in the first place, and are emphasizing far too much focus on business benefit and things that businesses want to achieve, almost completely forgetting that there is a customer in the mix. And ultimately, the reason why they exist is for the customer rather than for the business itself. And then the third reason of my top three would be a lack of structure and rigor in place to manage the customer experience. There are too many organizations who are doing it unintentionally, almost accidentally, without any structure. And as a result, they are finding it difficult, if not impossible, to sustain a focus on it. And that is made harder in an environment where many businesses are unable to think long term. In other words, they are not stable in the long term, continually changing leadership, changing strategic direction. And as a result, they never actually fundamentally transform the way they interact with customers. So there are more, but those are my top three.
Why do you think that companies lose sight of why they exist? Why do they lose connection with the customer?
So this is my honest opinion, and it's a generalization, but I think that very often we forget that there is a group of people associated with most organizations, not all, but most, who are remarkably influential, but actually are too often so far removed from the day-to-day workings of the organization that they are making demands of leadership without understanding what actually happens. And that group of people are the shareholders. I have in the past in my career been quite derogatory in a way about the behavior of senior leaders and their inability to focus on customer experience. But the older I get, the more I start to empathize with them rather than be derogatory to them. And the reason I empathize with senior leaders is that it's not often them that are demanding the obsession with the improvement of financial numbers, profit, revenue, cost, and everything that businesses are desperate to achieve. Very often, the reason why they're obsessed with those things is because that is what shareholders are demanding from them. And they are so demanding that senior leaders are fearful for retaining their jobs. And so that is where the obsession with financial performance comes from. I think that one of the things the customer experience community needs to consider is how can it spend more time getting the message across to shareholders, not just business leaders? Because I personally think it's a community that it hasn't been ignored, but we just haven't really made any step change in bringing them into the conversation.
So how do you do that? Because I've run into the same in my own consulting, working with clients, with senior leaders. You get to a point and their KPIs are tied to these financial metrics, oftentimes with a short-term time horizon. How do you help them change the conversation with their shareholders? So that might be the million-dollar question.
Absolutely. Well, as you would expect me to say, the answer to that is it's not easy. I certainly know that I haven't on many occasions made an intentional plan to engage with shareholders, which is not a particularly easy thing to do because it has to be managed through leadership, organizational leadership. But I think to me, it's all about developing an engagement plan that allows leadership to understand the importance for dialogue and being able to articulate the message to shareholders that ultimately the benefit to them is in the medium to long term, not the short term. And I suppose the most effective way of doing this is not necessarily through getting someone like you or I to speak to a shareholder, but it is to get another business leader who has been through it and succeeded to talk to a group of shareholders. Perhaps the most positive example of a business leader who has influenced shareholders to focus on the long-term benefit of customer experience is Jeff Bezos, as many people know, the founder of Amazon. Because for many years, Amazon didn't make a profit because Jeff Bezos has always been obsessed with reinvesting everything they make in continually improving the experience. Mm-hmm. The shareholders haven't liked him for it. In fact, they've hated him for it. But they are now reaping the benefit and will continue to reap the benefit in the long term. So a long-winded answer to your question, but my guidance would be to seek out business leaders in non-competing industries who are comfortable talking to other leaders and shareholders about the real success that focusing on customer experience in the long term can have. And I have used that strategy myself.
Okay. Do you think there's also an opportunity to engage with market analysts too? Because thinking about, okay, well, where do people feel their pressure from? For shareholders, I mean, they don't want the value of the company to go down, but a lot of that is dictated by what the market does or doesn't talk about. And then—
Brilliant point. Do market analysts even understand what customer experience is in the first place is a big question. And I've not considered that myself. So you are definitely onto something there, Julia. And yes, I think the business commentators in general need to have a much better understanding of the effect customer experience can have on business growth in general. And as far as I'm aware, there is nothing specific that has happened in that field. Just out of interest, I've done many radio interviews and TV interviews in the UK on customer experience. And every time I've been on the BBC, they introduce me as a customer service expert.
Oh, no.
It does not matter how many times I tell them. It's almost like they don't want to understand. And when I've managed to have a conversation with them, their response has been, the consumer won't know what customer experience means. And actually, it almost brings me back to the title of my book, because many people say to me, why did I call the book Customer What? And I called the book Customer What because in the early days of my career, people would ask me, what do I do for a living? And I would say, I'm a customer experience specialist. And 9 times out of 10, the response would be, customer what? Which is why the book is coming back.
That's brilliant. That's wonderful. So you've been in this field for a long time. We were just chatting a moment ago about how it's a field that is relatively new. I mean, you were working in customer experience before customer experience was probably even a thing.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that I find is that many of today's customer experience experts and specialists have really interesting and unique stories about how they arrived in their current career position. How and why did you become involved with customer experience?
It's a great question. What I'm about to say is probably not unusual. I actually started my career in process improvement. So I'm a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt, among other things. And I learned that particular trade when I was at GE, which is a company I'm sure that you know a lot about. Mm-hmm. And I was very taken by GE, as many people are, and by Jack Welch's approach to using a process improvement methodology to benefit customers. And it just made complete sense to me. And it became really the transformation point of my career. I sometimes rather sadly say that GE changed my life, but from a working perspective, it did, because it affected me, it touched me, and I believed it. And I transitioned from a process improvement specialist into a customer experience specialist whilst I was developing my career, because the more I started to focus on improving process, the more I realized that I couldn't do that unless I understood what it was the customer wanted in the first place. And it was while I was group head of customer experience for an online retailer that I had that realization that, you know, that's what I am. I am no longer a process specialist. I'm a customer experience specialist who understands process. So it's always been in me, but I would confidently put the credit down to the things I do today, very much to the influence that I obtained from Jack Welch during my GE days.
What kinds of changes have you seen over the years in this field as it's evolved and become something formalized?
So some of the changes have been very positive. The recognition as a profession, the development of the CX community, even the creation of the CX acronym itself, which many people will not know the origin, but the creation of the CX acronym is down to the CXPA. Bruce Temkin created that acronym. And I think that is something that people should not forget. Without the CXPA, we wouldn't be talking CX. It would be something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen a huge development in the profession from that perspective. And we've seen, without question, a change in business dialogue. Even though many businesses talking about it still don't quite understand it, most of them are now talking about it. And that can only be a good thing. Obviously, we need more to be practically doing it in the right way, but that's changing. The negative side for me is that we are at risk of going the same way as many business fads, in inverted commas, because the problem with anything that becomes popular is that every man and his dog tries to make money out of it. And to me, customer experience has never been something that you sell. Ultimately, the most effective customer experience practitioners are those who will do whatever it takes to do the right thing for the company they work with or for. if you try to turn customer experience into something that is monetized and you try to use it to make money out of organizations, then I think it starts to erode the genuine nature of what the science tries to achieve. I think I fought for 6 years to convince people that I am trying to help them do the right thing. And I think genuine practitioners are going to have to fight harder as more people come into the space trying to make money out of customer experience. And that's my biggest concern at the moment.
I think for business leaders, it only takes one time to be burned, to have your hand singed and think, right, this is all snake oil, I'm not interested in this, and to write it off. And so from that respect, anybody who's out there selling customer experience advisory services or, you know, consulting services as a practitioner, any services as a practitioner, needs to realize that there's a big responsibility that comes along with it. Because in many cases, you might be the very first person ever to engage with that particular organization on the topic.
Absolutely. And, you know, anyone that does that has a negative effect on us trying to do the right thing. And so, again, it's why for me, the need to keep strengthening our community is ever more important. And one of the brilliant things about our community is that it's very collaborative. You know, it works brilliantly when we don't consider ourselves as competitors of each other. We consider ourselves as collaborators. You know, what I love about this profession is that I collaborate with people all over the world. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to talk to you in South Africa when next week I'll be in Hungary and I'll also be in Kenya. This is a global phenomenon, a global community, and it's something we should all be hugely proud of, that it's been developed in such a short space of time. And I do believe that it can only go from strength to strength as long as we keep striving to do the right thing for the companies we work for.
Do you think there's something special about the customer experience profession that enables it to be so collaborative?
It's a difficult question to answer without sounding egotistical or arrogant. Is there something special about us? No, we're no different to any other group of professionals, group of humans. I think what may be slightly different is that genuine customer experience practitioners, this is something that they do because it goes beyond a job, in my view. You know, I always say to people that I'm a customer experience specialist, and yes, that really is a job, but it's not a job, it's a vocation. It's what I just do. It's what I was born to do. And I think that the reason why our community works so well is that we're almost like the Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we come together because we've all got the same problem. The problem being a positive one is that we will do whatever we can to get companies to do the right thing for customers and for colleagues. And it's almost ingrained in our hearts. That's what we do. And when you talk to another customer experience professional, it doesn't feel like a business conversation. It's like counseling, because we're talking about something we truly believe in. And that's what makes it special. Is it different? I don't think I can ever say that. Is it special? Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure other professions may argue that as well. But I think it's special, and I'm delighted to be part of it.
Yeah. I think one of the components that makes the customer experience profession a bit different from others is that at the core, there's the need for compassion and empathy for others. If you want to be a successful customer experience practitioner, you need to be able to help your clients put themselves in the shoes of their customers. And that lends itself perhaps to a certain kind of person, or maybe it's not even a certain kind of person. Maybe it's a skill that you have to cultivate as you work in this space that then enables you to, I guess, empathize and be compassionate for your fellow compatriots.
Absolutely right. This is what makes it special.
I get a lot of people contacting me, asking me about how to get involved in the field of customer experience. It's an exciting new world. What kinds of tips and ideas do you have about this? What would be your suggestions for how to break into the field of customer experience?
It is a great question, and I get asked that question a lot as well. And there's no easy answer to it, unfortunately. It is not as simple as other sort of legacy professions, if you like. If you have a genuine belief a genuine passion for customer experience, then my honest advice is that you need to do whatever you can to get involved. It could be that you are in an existing role doing something else in an organization and that you start to volunteer to do things in addition to your day job. You may want to do additional things outside of work to develop your knowledge. You've got to demonstrate that real desire to want to be part of it, and then it will happen. Many people get into customer experience roles accidentally, even now. I have 20 people on my masterclass this week, and at least 25% of them were given a customer experience role accidentally. We are still so early in its evolution that it's going to be quite difficult to find an opportunity that's just sitting there waiting for you. What you will have to do is to show your desire to want to be part of it. And not everyone is up for that fight. Not everyone has that much desire. But to be completely honest, that is going to be, in many cases, what you're going to have to do to start getting people to notice that passion inside of you. I have a client in the UK. A brilliantly passionate lady has just been put into a customer experience manager role, and she is absolutely perfect for that role. Did she choose it? No. Did someone spot something in her from a personality perspective, from an attribute perspective? Yes. And that's what people are looking for. So if customer experience is what you believe in, you're going to have to start doing stuff, even if it means doing that in addition to your current role.
What are some of the kinds of opportunities that people can keep an eye out for in terms of carving out their own customer experience space if they're in an organization that doesn't have something formalized? What kinds of initiatives or kinds of things can people stick their hand up and say, hey, I'll do that?
So we've talked about storytelling already. Telling stories is a brilliant way of starting to get involved. You know, there is nothing stopping anyone from experiencing their own organization from a customer perspective and writing about the experience and sharing it with people. There is no reason why you can't go and experience a competitor's offer and write about the experience that you had. Start taking the opportunity to go and just do things and share them with others. Spot things. If you find something that you know is detrimental to the customer experience, do something about it. Don't ignore it. Do something. Be proactive. Don't wait to be asked. Go and do. If you're able to, attend conferences, watch and listen to webinars, get involved in the CXPA community and go to networking groups. The more you ingrain yourself in the community, the more likely it is that someone will spot you and say, you are just what we're looking for. There is no easy answer to this other than, like most traditional professions, actually, you've got to put the effort in, and that effort will pay off in the long run.
Since there aren't many formalized tertiary education options for customer experience, how might one look to upskill themselves?
There are very few today publicly available learning options. There are no official textbooks, for example. However, there are many exceptionally good books that have been written by many thought leaders around the world that are a must-read list of resources for anyone that is interested. There are a number of brilliantly useful syndicated website resources where you can get a plethora of articles on a daily basis on all of the customer experience competencies. CustomerThink.com is one of them. MyCustomer.com is another. There is a UK-based magazine called CXM.co.uk. There are so many online resources these days that there is enough to keep you busy for years just reading and following writers and thought leaders across the world. In terms of attending physical training courses, Increasingly, companies are starting to offer those in-house, and there are a number of training providers around the world who do offer public courses. It's not always accessible to everyone, but if you are able to convince your boss, then it's well worth exploring. In terms of getting a formal qualification, right now, the only truly professional and independent qualification is the CCXP accreditation, which is offered by the CXPA. And that ultimately should be the aspiration for anyone working in a CX-related role. Mm-hmm. However, there are eligibility criteria, and it is an experiential qualification. So ultimately, it's for someone who has been in a role for a length of time rather than starting their career.
Yeah. I know for me personally, when I discovered some of the blogs and some of the websites out there like Customer Think, it was this amazing moment of realization. I was like, oh, I found my people. There are other people out there who are thinking about these things, who are pondering these things. And when people ask me, what are the best resources for self-study, I'll point them out there to the ocean of thought leadership that's available at your fingertips. It's amazing.
And it's the best thing to do, because the hardest thing about customer experience as a profession is that it is a profession that's not black or white. There is no right way to do anything. And so the need to gather knowledge from as many different thought leaders as possible is really very important. And it's out there. It's all out there in the ether. And as I say, in addition to getting stuff online, there are some great books if people are that way inclined. And that's not me trying to sell mine.
Yeah, well, yours would definitely be on that list. You and I can chat offline and make a little reading list to share with listeners. So last question, when one starts working in the field of customer experience, you can't help but analyze customer experience situations that arise through your own personal experiences as a consumer, sometimes much to the annoyance of your friends and family. These moments can serve as interesting case studies, even though they're not always fun. Can you share a particularly memorable can't unsee it moment?
I can, because it's still fresh in my memory. And it is related to my last trip to South Africa. So it would make sense for me to share it, but it's not a nice one, just to warn you. And it's not a South African problem as such. It just happened in South Africa. But I was last over a few weeks ago in March in Johannesburg. I tend to fly with Emirates when I come to South Africa. And on this occasion, I left on Friday afternoon, and my flight was supposed to depart at 7:30 in the evening. About 20 minutes away from the airport, I got an SMS telling me my flight had been delayed to 1 a.m. Now, that kind of thing happens. You know, it's not great. I was already there at the airport. You know, I travel a lot, so I can get into the lounge. So I thought, you know, it's not the end of the world. I'll get into the lounge, I'll do some work, and, you know, I'll just have a bit of a rest. The experience went from bad to worse. At about midnight, I went to the gate because I was bored of being in the lounge. I got to the gate, and there was absolutely no activity whatsoever. I looked out of the window, there were no crew. All of the freight was sitting by the side of the aircraft, and I travel a lot to know that that plane was going nowhere. At 1:45, there was still nothing, no movement, no crew. The passengers were getting a little bit antsy at that point, but there was absolutely no communication, nothing at all. To cut a very long story short, at 3:00 in the morning, when we'd still had no communication, we suddenly found out online that the flight had been delayed to the following afternoon, 3 p.m.
Oh, no.
We found out online before anyone in the airport told us. Again, the communication was terrible. In fact, it's worse than terrible. It just didn't happen. There was no one from Emirates present, and the only people who were there to face a lot of very unhappy passengers were the handling agent, who were Bidvest. And I heard on at least 5 occasions from Bidvest employees, I know you're upset, but we don't work for Emirates. It's got nothing to do with us. It was shocking. At 3 a.m., they started to take us out of the airport to put us in hotels. Half the people who were on that flight had one-trip visas, so they weren't allowed out of the airport. And so they were either offered to share bedrooms in the Pratia Hotel, the transfer hotel at the airport, or they had to sleep on the floor. Those of us who did went out, I took matters into my own hands and just took myself to the Intercontinental because I thought there's no way I'm going to try to squeeze my way onto a minibus to be taken to a hotel that could be anywhere. I got to the Continental and managed to get a room before the first class passengers arrived, who weren't very happy. So I did manage to get into a room at 3:30 in the morning. I heard that there were other passengers taken to the Holiday Inn and various other hotels, none of which were prepared for them to arrive. Some people didn't get to their bedrooms till 5 in the morning. The whole thing was an utter shambles. The following day, when we got back to the airport, the flight had been rescheduled for 2 hours after a scheduled Emirates flight, but with no additional staff on the check-in desks. So it was mayhem in the airport. And throughout the whole thing, we didn't receive a single apology.
Oh, not a single apology? Oof.
It was a 17-hour delay. And the only thing that happened was Emirates dumped a load of loyalty points in our accounts, if we had them, but didn't even tell us that they did it. It was just a shocking incident. And it doesn't surprise me, sadly, with Emirates, that that's what they do. I wrote about it. I tweeted them. I have sent the CEO a link to the blog, and I've heard nothing, and I expect to hear nothing. And sadly, they are representative of too many. And that's what saddens me sometimes, is that it's why our profession is needed so much, because these kind of things cannot continue to go on.
And as a customer experience professional, you can look at that situation and see the weak points in the armor, and you can see where it's fallen apart. And, you know, you hear the Bidvest employees not taking ownership and passing the buck, and you think, okay, right, the people who are delivering this experience are not on the same team.
What frustrates me is that that's not the first time that's happened. You know, in 30 years, I hate to think how many times that's happened to Emirates. They don't care, because if they cared, that wouldn't happen. They would have a lot more respect for the human beings that actually allow that airline to fly in the first place. And it isn't just Emirates. I've had similarly awful experiences with other airlines. But, you know, ultimately, it's got to stop. Companies cannot treat their customers in that way. And the more we bring those stories to life through our work, the more we can influence those things to stop in the future.
And in this world that we live in, where customers are so much more empowered with information and access to different product and service providers, it really puts businesses and brands at risk of losing customers. I mean, 20 years ago, this wasn't the same story, but now you can write about this, you can tweet about it. And
absolutely.
I mean, you've got stories like the United Breaks Guitars thing, or, you know, last year when that doctor got pulled off the flight. I mean, these things go viral.
That's right. If you take that as an example, Julia, when United Breaks Guitars happened, their share price dropped by $180 million. Last year with the doctor, it dropped $400 million.
Yeah.
You know, what's it going to take for them to actually change? And they seem to forget that airlines like TWA and Pan Am cease to exist ultimately. No company is too big to fail. And I think, will it take another big company to fall by the wayside because they failed to transform? It may well take that. But, you know, what I would rather companies understand is that don't wait for the platform to start burning. Start transforming now so you don't have to start reacting when it's too late.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. This has been a wonderful and enlightening conversation.
That is always a pleasure, Julia. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Ian Golding. For more information about Ian's book or the reading list that he and I curated after this episode, please visit my website, julia-allfelt.com, where you can find show notes from my conversation with Ian and sign up to get notified when new episodes go live. If you have questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, or would like to get in touch, you can find me on Twitter or LinkedIn. My handle is @JuliaAltfeld.